Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth Area Talking Newspaper. Today is Friday the 6th of March. I'm Jean Cole, and we are the Yellow Team. And I'm joined by two readers from our team for this week's programme. Let's meet them.
Hello, I'm Maggie West.
Hello, I'm Sue Smallwood.
Before we bring you this week's news from the Dawlish Gazette and Tynmouth News, or Tynmouth Post, sorry, here's some notices for you. Right, on Tuesday the 10th of March, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Dartmouth and the price is £19. On Wednesday the 11th of March, there is a Lent lunch at Kenton Church from 12 till 2. And on the same day, Cofton WI meet at St Mary's Hall, Dawlish Warren at 2:30. And next Saturday, the 14th of March, at St Paul's Church, Starcross, they have a tabletop sale, which I think is from 11 till 1:30. Then, on Tuesday, the 17th of March, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Bickley Mill and Fisherman's Cot, which is a new venue for them, and the cost of that is £19. And on the same day, the 17th, at 2:30pm at the Manor House in Dawlish, the Devonshire Association are having a talk on the early history of Dawlish by Derek Gore. On Wednesday the 18th of March, Holcombe Garden Society meet at 2:30pm in the Village Hall for a talk by Julia Tremlett on the National Gardens Trust. And on Saturday the 21st and Sunday the 22nd of March, the Shanty Festival takes place around Starcross and Cotwood, with many sea shanty singers taking part in various venues. The phone number for Dawlish Community Transport is 01626 888777. That's 01626 888777. Tynmouth Pavilions on Tuesday the 17th of March at 2:30pm and 7:30 are showing a film called Sentimental Values. And on Wednesday the 11th of March from Saturday the 14th of March at Dawlish Shaftesbury Theatre, there is a play called House by the Lake, which is a psychological thriller. And finally, on Saturday the 14th of March at the Strand Community Centre in Dawlish, there are St Patrick's Day celebrations with folk music and a ceilidh. That starts at 6:30. Booking is essential, and that's £5, which includes a meal, which is not bad, actually. Okay, now, here are this week's headline stories. Travellers take over council headquarters car park. Legal action against South West Water expanded. And the banking hub finally founds a permanent home. And so to our first story from Maggie.
Travellers take over council HQ car park. Chief Ryback, Stephen Seagal's eponymous hero of the Under Siege films, was unable to come to the aid of Tynbridge District Council, who found themselves under siege last weekend after travellers pitched camp in the car park of the council's Ford House headquarters in Newton Abbot. The council's public car parks and playing fields are normally a favoured stop-off point for travellers, but this time it found the problem to be very much in its own backyard, with a score of caravans and motorhomes parked up and enjoying the early spring sunshine. More than 20 vans, caravans and cars pitched up in the car park at Ford House in Newton Abbot on Saturday. By Tuesday morning, the group had vacated the site, but not before staff and visitors had been affected. A spokesman for the council confirmed the vehicles from the unauthorised encampment left on Monday evening. They said, "We followed the same legal process as we do with all unauthorised encampments, and notified the courts on Monday that we planned to begin eviction proceedings." However, the travellers left of their own accord before these court proceedings were enacted. We don't have any further information as to why they left, when they did, or where they have moved on to, but as far as we're aware, they're not at another site in the district. Cleansing teams from the council checked the car park and grounds and cleared away any waste which had been left behind. Bins had been provided by the council, as with other unauthorised encampments on council-owned land. Ford House car parks, which had been closed off while the travellers were on site, were fully reopened to visitors, staff and councillors on Wednesday. The camp had meant disruption for all users of Ford House, which, as well as being the council headquarters, is also home to the job centre and a dental practice. After the arrival of the group, there was damage to Ford House, which was reported on Sunday. The front door was damaged and several ground floor windows were smashed. These were safely boarded up and will be repaired. Police confirmed they had visited the site with council officers. A spokesman said, "We've received a report of windows smashed at the site, and inquiries into that report are ongoing at this time." While the travellers were on site, much of the parking area was out of action. This meant available spaces were prioritised for staff working in critical services and allowing capacity for visitors to the council, job centre and the dental surgery. The council remained open as normal for anyone with an appointment. Residents took to social media to suggest Teignmouth Council should be finding travellers somewhere authorised to park. One said, "They should be sorting out the homeless somewhere to live," and another observed, "Then sort them out somewhere to park up." Others said, "Let's see how the council like it and also how quickly they'll get them moved off compared to every other place they go." And there are two photographs. One is an aerial view of Ford House showing the caravans and camper homes parked around, and the other one shows a notice on the then empty car park informing the travellers that they had 24 hours to leave or face legal action.
Legal action against South West Water is expanded. Legal action against South West Water over sewage pollution has been expanded to include people living in Dawlish and Teignmouth. The claim, led by law firm Lee Day, will now be open to people living in the two Teignbridge towns. The announcement comes as South West Water features in the hard-hitting Channel 4 docudrama Dirty Business. The expanded claim is the first environmentalment group legal claim by a coastal community against a water company to tackle sewage pollution in the UK. It argues South West Water's failings are wide and entrenched in many coastal towns across the Devon and Cornwall region, with a report from the water regulator Ofwat identifying systemic failings by the water company. The region's sewage system is managed by the water company, which in 2024 was reported to have discharged 544,429 hours of untreated sewage into the region's seas and rivers. The water company was also recorded as the sector's second worst performer for sewage pollution incidents in 2024. Community members, represented by law firm Lee Day, call for the water company to be held accountable for sewage pollution, as the company is ranked the lowest performing water company since rankings began in 2011. Members of the community allege the pollution has negatively impacted businesses, many of which are reliant on tourism, as well as impacted individuals' homes and disrupted people pursuing activities such as wild swimming, surfing, paddleboarding, windsurfing, sailing and visiting the beach. The claim was launched in 2024 following legal action taken by wild swimmer and Exmouth resident Joe Bateman against South West Water. More than 1,400 clients have joined the claim since its launch, with both individuals and businesses objecting to South West Water's management of the sewerage network, and particularly its repeated use of combined storm overflows, or CSOs, which trigger bathing alerts and beach closures, preventing people from using the coast. The claim is being brought on the grounds of public and private nuisance, in that discharges as a result of CSOs, burst pipes, or other network failures have negatively impacted people's lives, livelihoods, or property. This kind of claim is allowed for by a Supreme Court judgment from 2024, which held that claims against water companies for nuisances caused by sewage discharges in public waterways can now be brought. South West Water has a track record of very poor environmental performance. By outlining my client's claims and expanding in this way, we are ensuring anyone who feels they have been impacted by sewage pollution in Dawlish, Sidmouth, Tynmouth, or at Longrock Beach or Thistle Beach in Cornwall has the opportunity to take action. And there is a lovely photograph taken from the Warren looking across towards Dawlish.
Banking Hub finally finds permanent home. A permanent home for the Dawlish Banking Hub is now open for business. The facility is officially opened at premises in Brunswick Place. Town councillors have welcomed the opening of the important new facility, which will provide residents and local businesses with access to essential face-to-face banking services, supporting the high street and ensuring vital services remain within the community. A spokesman for Dawlish Town Council, which campaigned with traders for a hub in the town, said thanks to everyone involved in making this happen, a positive step forward for Dawlish. We encourage residents to make use of the hub and support this valuable addition to our town. A temporary hub opened in August 24 at Strand Hall and has been operating there until the new permanent location could be found. Cash Access UK, which runs the country's growing network of banking hubs, is a not-for-profit company set up by a number of UK banks and building societies to enable consumers and small businesses to access cash, deposit and banking services where they are needed across the UK. Dawlish has been without a high street bank branch for some years, and the banking hub has proved popular with customers who want to visit a branch in person. The hub will be open Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and customers are able to access a variety of services, including withdrawing cash, depositing cash, deposit cheques, pay utility bills, and check account balances, as well as top up gas and electricity. Registered business customers can also collect change. A community banker is available and there is a private space for face-to-face talks about more complicated banking inquiries. A member of staff from banking companies is available each day. On Mondays, this is Barclays, Santander on Wednesday, NatWest on Thursdays and Lloyds on Friday. And there's a photograph of the banking hub looking very smart as it's newly decorated in the Brunswick Place in Dawlish.
Dawlish marks Ukraine conflict anniversary. More than 50 people gathered in Dawlish to mark 4 years since the full invasion of Ukraine. Dawlish Town Council hosted a short service at the Manor House to honour the lives lost, show solidarity with those who continue to endure hardship, and reflect on the importance of peace and unity during a very poignant service. Mayor of Dawlish, Councillor Anthony James, gave an introduction before raising the Ukrainian flag, and a moment of silence followed by a reading. A town council spokesman said, "It was an opportunity for our community to show that we stand together in support of the Ukrainian people." Dawlish has hosted Ukrainian refugees since the start of the war.
Bereavement Cafe opens in Dawlish. A funeral home in Dawlish has launched a new monthly bereavement cafe. The Coffee and Friends sessions, held at Co-op Funeral Care on Lawn Terrace, take place on the first Friday of every month from 10:30 a.m. to 12. The relaxed drop-in meetings are open to anyone experiencing bereavement or loneliness. Run by funeral director Catherine Bate and funeral arranger Valerie Worthington, the group provides an informal and supportive environment where people can chat and meet others over tea, coffee and homemade cake. Catherine said, We wanted to create something warm and approachable. It's simply a chance to sit together and share experiences. Grief can feel isolating, and loneliness can affect people at any stage of life. And there is a colour photograph of Valerie and Catherine. They've got their homemade cake in front of them, smiling broadly.
Fencing on seawall while repair work continues. New fencing has been installed on Dawlish seawall while repairs to storm damage continue. Signage indicating the footpath was closed and had been in place, but those have been ignored several times by people pushing past them and walking along the wall. Now fencing has been erected to prevent the path being used while essential repairs continue. A spokesman for the South West Rail Resilience Programme explained, "This is a reminder that the footpath between the end of the new seawall at Coast Guards and Buddy's Cafe at Red Rock is currently closed while we repair recent storm damage. We have put up new fencing to keep everyone safe while we work, so please don't attempt to access the path along the old seawall here. The repairs are set to take a number of weeks as we need to work around the tides and any weather challenges." And there's a photograph of the Orange Army at work along the seawall, and damaged seawall. I think it must be coming up to high tide because the sea is quite high and breaking up. It was quite rough as well. So, and they're carrying on. You can see them in the background working and trying to repair it.
Plan submitted for derelict building. A derelict and disused building in Tynmouth could become serviced accommodation as a planning application is submitted to Teignbridge Council. Submitted by Cloud9 Investments Limited, the application is seeking permission to change the use of 137 to 139 Bitton Park Road in Tynmouth, and they want to change it to serviced accommodation. The building has remained vacant for a prolonged period and no longer provides an active or viable commercial use in its current form, the planning statement says. Teignbridge Council are due to make a decision by April the 21st, 2026. The proposed development seeks to bring the building back into beneficial use through its conversion to serviced accommodation. The proposal utilises the existing structure and footprint with only limited and proportionate alterations. The planning statement says serviced accommodation is considered an appropriate and compatible use for the site, providing managed short-stay accommodation similar in nature to a small-scale hotel or guest accommodation. Serviced accommodation refers to short or medium-term fully furnished homes, either apartments or houses, that are available to book by the night, week or month. Unlike hotels, these properties offer more space, privacy and flexibility. The Mid Devon Advertiser Facebook page has a number of comments from the public. "About time something was done about that eyesore." "Finally, such an eyesore. Been an eyesore for a long time. Good that someone can make it into something nice." "Huh, don't hold your breath. Several planning applications have tried. It's so close to a busy road, often gets rejected as accommodation. They refused change of use before. Commercial was said to be better as it would be so close to the road. That and the lack of parking." "About time. It's a pity Teignbridge don't have some of the empty buildings in their area made into accommodation to rent. There's enough of them." And there is a picture of 137 to 139 Bitton Park Road, which I am very familiar with as I drive past it quite often. And yes, it really is a dump.
Shop shut for selling counterfeit goods. A Tynmouth shop has been shut down by police for 3 months for selling counterfeit goods. The closure order was granted for the JR Mini Market in Bank Street. A police spokesman said this is a direct result of being caught selling counterfeit tobacco products on several occasions by trading standards. JR Mini Market must now remain closed for 3 months. Failure to comply with the order can result in arrest and prosecution. Unlike regulated tobacco products, counterfeit and illegal products are not subject to quality control, so pose higher health risks and have a negative impact on local legitimate businesses. The closure is part of a clampdown by police and trading standards on illegal tobacco sales. Police have pledged a robust action against any premises selling fake goods. And there is a photograph of the front of JR Mini Market, all shut up with its shutters down.
Plans submitted for temporary classrooms. Plans have been submitted to keep temporary classrooms at Kenton Primary School for up to 3 years. The retrospective application to Teignbridge Council by Porter Cabin Limited, which has been appointed by the Secretary of State for Education, will allow the temporary buildings to remain on site at East Town Lane until a replacement school is built. The small village primary school suffered catastrophic flooding in 2023, and the children were taught in three other locations nearby until they were all able to move into temporary three single-storey and a two-storey building, which were ready last year. The School Trust has been working in collaboration with the Department for Education and has received confirmation that the school has been accepted in the School Rebuilding Programme for a replacement school. Funding has been approved, and the Department of Education had indicated the new permanent school would be completed by September this year. Delays now mean that this is unlikely. However, a planning application for the permanent school is due to be submitted shortly and construction to begin immediately if it is approved. In the meantime, the current application is to retain existing three single-storey and one two-storey temporary modular buildings while also installing a car park, pathways, fencing, gates and artificial turf. The 2023 flooding at the old building in Mamhead Road was the most significant and disruptive in living memory. While it had been planned to return, the flood risk remains and it was considered no longer suitable. Until the new school is built, Porter Cabin assisted the Department of Education in supplying a modular solution to ensure that Kenton Primary School can continue to deliver high standards of education until the permanent solution is realised. Once the construction of the permanent school building is complete, the temporary modular buildings will be removed from the site and the land reinstated to its original condition. And there's an absolutely lovely photograph of some of the children at the Kenton School. And I think it must be lunchtime because it all looks like they've all got their lunch boxes open. And they're smiling, great big beaming smiles, and obviously having a lot of fun and enjoying their lunch.
Shoreland's Traffic Light Birthday Bash. A birthday party has been held in Shoreland to mark 2 years of the village's not-so-temporary traffic lights. Fed-up parish councillors organised the event, complete with anniversary cake with candles, as a tongue-in-cheek way of highlighting the disgraceful length of time they have been in place. The two-way lights first went up in February 2024, following a landslip on an embankment between Ringmore Road and the A379. But 2 years on, the wall has still not been repaired and its condition continues to deteriorate. A Freedom of Information request in November last year revealed the Highways Authority, Devon County Council, had spent more than £43,000 on the set of lights to manage the wall collapse. A spokesman for the parish council said it was very much a tongue-in-cheek celebration organised by Shoreden Parish Council with the help of the county councillor, Heather Horner, to highlight the very long time it's taking to resolve the issue of the embankment collapse. The delay in resolving this had resulted in temporary traffic lights being in place for a whopping 2 years. Invitations were sent to the director responsible for transport at Devon County Council, the chief executive of Devon County Council, and the member for highways to the party. They were all invited to the party. However, surprise, surprise, nobody came. Councillor Horner said she was disappointed at their non-attendance and said she'd been given assurances by Devon County Council late last year that the road would be repaired. She said this has since been followed with Silence. The parish council spokesman added, Shoreden Parish Council had hoped that those responsible at Devon County Council would take the opportunity to come to Shoreden and listen to councillors' concerns about the long delays carrying out the road repairs and the impact of the long-running temporary traffic lights on both the environment and local residents and business. We would, of course, be very much like to be given a firm timetable for when the work to fix the embankment will finally be done and the lights removed. Parish Council Chairman Councillor Danielle Westlake said she understood that the costs of having the traffic lights had now risen to well over £50,000. She also pointed out that this amount of money would have gone a long way towards covering the cost of the repairs. Devon County Council has said previously that discussions with the landowner are continuing, and for the meantime, traffic management will remain in place. One resident said, I personally think it's a disgrace the amount of money being spent on those traffic lights and the reluctance of the council to do anything about it. And there's a lovely photograph of some of the Shoreden Parish councillors at the party with balloons and so on, standing by the traffic lights, which at the time are red.
A three-year revamp transforms park. A major three-year restoration project at Stover Country Park has now been completed, and the public are invited to help celebrate the occasion this coming weekend. The Restoring Stover Park project has seen more than £4.2 million invested in the park. Half of the funding came from the National Lottery Heritage Fund, with the remainder provided by Devon County Council and a range of partners. The project has transformed the park for wildlife, heritage and visitors. It marks the biggest programme of improvement at Stover for generations. To mark the occasion, a commemorative granite plinth was unveiled. There's been tree planting in new woodland and celebrating Stover's history. Celebrations continue on Sunday, March the 8th, with a free public event at the Stover Country Park. Everyone is welcome to drop in between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. to explore the improvements and enjoy family-friendly activities. Over the 3 years of the restoration, volunteers have played a vital role in the project, contributing more than 5,500 hours caring for Stover's wildlife and heritage. The project has delivered new and improved facilities, restored historical features, improved paths and trails, and carried out major work to improve Stover Lake and its wildlife. It has also helped more people enjoy the park through education, volunteering and community activities. Councillor Jackie Hodgson, Devon County Council Cabinet Member for Climate Change, Environment and Transport, said, "This project shows what can be achieved when people and experts come together to care for a special place. Stover Country Park is now better protected for the future and even more welcoming for visitors. It is an extraordinary achievement in this wonderful location and a moment to celebrate as Stover opens up for everyone to appreciate and enjoy." For more information, email restoringstoverpark, all one word, at devon.gov.uk. And there is a photograph of an aluminium workboat on the lake with some of the volunteers.
Cycling program starts at Stover Park. A new initiative to encourage cycling at a popular Teignbridge park has been launched. The programme at Stover Country Park has been put together by Active Devon and Restoring Stover Park, with the aim of providing a range of opportunities. Both organisations have been working in close partnership to bring the new project, which will include adult cycle confidence sessions and practical bike maintenance opportunities, to the heart of Stover Country Park near Newton Abbot. As part of the project's wider community engagement programme, the collaboration is helping local people enjoy the park in a new and more active way. Restoring Stover Park is a three-year project funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund, Devon County Council and other funders, running until March 2026. Its focus has been the restoration of both the natural and built heritage within Stover Country Park, as we heard previously. But now, through a major capital programme and an extensive community engagement strategy, the project has brought together a range of organisational and community partners to help protect the landscape for the future. Engagement Officer at Restoring Stover Park, Eve Mulster, said, "We are delighted the Active Devon has become involved as a project partner. Our work has been very productive, and Stover Country Park now has three bikes and helmets available for free use during adult cycling confidence sessions, which run once a month at Stover. Doctor Bike sessions are also starting monthly from our new community workshop, offering residents free cycle safety checks, minor repairs, and the chance to learn more about maintaining their own bikes." And Aaron Harverson, cycling champion at Active Devon, said this joined-up approach between Active Devon and the park team is helping the local community make the best possible use of both new and existing cycling infrastructure at Stover. By combining facilities, expertise and shared goals, this partnership is ensuring that cycling can be more and more accessible, more visible and more fun for people of all ages and abilities. We are looking forward to enabling as many people as possible to join our Doctor Bike and Instructor-led Confidence Sessions at Stover, which are running until July 2026, and encouraging everyone to be active in nature, supporting their positive well-being and physical health. The sessions aim to help people build skills, reconnect with cycling and enjoy active travel in a safe, supportive environment, whether they have cycled recently or need a confidence boost. We're excited that the Active Devon team can continue to deliver cycling initiatives beyond the lifetime of the restoration programme and for the local community, therefore ensuring a legacy to the lottery project for many years to come. And there's a photograph of a couple of bikes, obviously waiting to be lent out, and a big poster saying free adult cycling training, and a lady in a red long cardigan and flowing hair. No helmet, I noticed, but on her bike, obviously getting her exercise in.
Traygo Mills Leisure Park to reopen with new operators. Traygo Mills Leisure Park and its famous model railway will reopen in time for Easter after being taken over by specialist operators. Bosses of the complex at Newton Abbott have announced the takeover just months after the centre was shut down with the loss of five jobs. Now the park will be run by experienced leisure operative Play Leisure. Leading the new era is Matthew Conridge from Exeter, Managing Director of Play Leisure Services. Devon-born Matthew has a personal connection to the park that makes its reopening especially meaningful. Having grown up visiting Traygo's family fun park himself, he says the decision to step in was both professional and personal. He said, "I used to come to Traygo's fun park as a child, and like so many local families, I have fantastic memories of days spent here. I didn't want to see it stay closed. This place is part of Devon's story. We're incredibly proud to be bringing it back to life and ensuring a new generation can make the same memories." Under Matthew's leadership, Play Leisure is committed not only to reopening the gates, but to securing a strong and sustainable future for this much-loved attraction. Visitors can look forward to the full return of all the rides and the world-famous model railway. As well as reopening the attractions, a programme of ongoing improvements is already underway. Over the coming weeks, behind-the-scenes, updates and progress will be shared on TikTok, giving the community a front-row seat as the park prepares to welcome visitors. A spokesman for Traygo Mills said, "The reopening represents more than just the return of a family day out. It signals renewed confidence, investment, and opportunity for the local economy, supporting jobs and tourism across the region." And there's a lovely photograph. It was obviously a day when it wasn't raining because the sun appears to be shining. And there are three young men who look very purposeful, waiting underneath a lovely coloured banner which says, Welcome to Traygo's Family Fun Park.
And now I've got some notices of deaths. First of all, Faye Kenneth passed away peacefully on Saturday, the 21st of February, aged 98. Much loved husband to Kathleen, father to Stephen, Keith and Mark, also to 9 great-grandchildren. And, oh, it's 9 grandchildren and 19 great-grandchildren. The funeral service at the Methodist Church Dawlish is on March the 12th at 12:30, followed by a cremation at Exeter Crematorium at 2 p.m. And now, Overhill Mary. Our lovely mum, Mary, passed peacefully away on the 14th of February at the age of 103. She will be greatly missed by Linda, Diana and their husbands, Stuart and Jack, grandchildren Barry, Carly, Brian, Lucy, Katie and their spouses, and her 11 great-grandchildren. She will be forever in our hearts. Her funeral, a celebration of her life, will be held at the Parish Church of St. John the Baptist, Bishop Stainton, on Wednesday, the 11th of March at 2:30, followed by refreshments at the Cockhaven Arms, Bishop Stainton. Bride clothes are welcome. There will also be a short burial service for family and friends from Cornworthy and surrounding area that will be held at the Parish Church of St. Peter's, Cornworthy, on Thursday, the 12th of March at 12:30. The family wish to express their grateful thanks to all at Bishop Stainton House for the loving and dignified care that Mary received. Family flowers only, please, but donations for Here and Now, audio recordings for the blind, and Stockman and Larum charity account, which is the Bishop Stainton House Residence Fund. These may be given by retiring collection or online at www.stockmanandlorum.uk/donations or cheques payable to Here and Now and Stockman and Lorum charity account may be sent to Les Down Funeral Director at Stockman and Lorum, 7 Churston Broadway, Paignton, TQ46LE, and the telephone number is 01803 343 710. Next we have Stapleton Simon Rushforth, passed peacefully away on the 22nd of February 2026, aged 89 years. Much loved husband of Heather. Much loved and loving father of Susanna and Catherine. Loving and proud grandfather of Tom, Joe, Molly and Rory. The funeral will take place in St. Gregory's Church, Dawlish, on Wednesday the 18th of March at 2 p.m. Family flowers only. Donations, if desired, for Alzheimer's Research UK and Memory Lane Cafe, Dawlish, may be left by retiring collection. Dawlish Funeral Care, Scala House, Lawn Terrace, Dawlish, EX79PY, telephone 01626 862 426. And now Swain, Susan Amelia, niece Sally, also known as the crazy lady, the loony with the long hair, finally lost her battle, bravely born, peacefully at home on Tuesday, the 17th of February, aged 74 years. Dearly loved and loving wife of the late Chris Swain. Exceptional daughter to the late Dick and Vera. Mother to Matthew and Craig and sister to Richard. Wonderful auntie, great aunt and godmother to Paul, Lynn, Jake, Millie, Heather, George, James, Shireen and Sean. Steadfast and loyal friend to an abundance of people, many of whom knew her from her time at her second home, her beach hut, or her time with the carnivals. She will be deeply missed by all her family and friends. One-of-a-kind funeral service to be held at St. Peter Chapel, Exeter and Devon Crematorium on Thursday the 12th of March at 12:30, preceded by last journey down the Strand and up the Brunswick. Family flowers only, please. Donations if required to Rowcroft Hospice or by retiring collection. Susan requests you to wear something with a touch of turquoise, please. The family would like to thank all the wonderful NHS staff who treated Susan at Torbay Hospital, particularly Dr. Tom Skinner. Also, the various carers who cared for her at home and the Rowcroft Hospice team. The service will be streamed live from the crematorium. Please contact Matthew or J.H. Way Funeral Services for information and the password to access the on-stream cremation. All inquiries to Lindsay Kemp, J.H. Way Funeral Services, 01626 862321. And there's just two more to go. Beaton Neil passed peacefully on the 15th of February, aged 86. A much loved father to Catriona and Neil, as well as a cherished grandfather and great grandfather. His funeral service will be held on Monday the 9th of March at 1:30 p.m. at the Parish Church of St. Michael and the Archangel, East Tynmouth, followed by a private cremation. Family flowers only, please, but donations to Rowcroft Hospice can be made online at www.oliverjnapmanfuneralservice, all one word, .co.uk. Further inquiries to Oliver J. Knapman Funeral Service, 19 Orchard Gardens, Tynmouth, TQ14 8DJ. Telephone 01626 772080. And the final one is Carter John Willoughby. Passed away peacefully at home on the 14th of February, aged 91. Loving father to Anthony and granddad to Alex and Louise, he will be deeply missed by all who knew and loved him. A funeral service to take place on Thursday, the 19th of March, 11 o'clock at St. Gregory's Church, Dawlish, followed by a private burial. Donations in lieu of flowers are for the good work of Rowcroft Hospice at Home and Dementia UK and can be made by retiring collection or direct donations to the charity. Enquiries to J.H. Way Funeral Services, 9 Brook Street, Dawlish, 01626 862321, and the website is jhway@funeralpartners.co.uk.
They're still there for you after all these years. For anyone who has ever hummed, "I'll be there for you," while picturing six friends on an orange couch, Friends, the musical parody, delivered exactly what it promised. A fast-paced, joke-packed celebration of one of television's most beloved sitcoms, Friends, writes Neil Edwards. The show, which played last week at Torquay's Princess Theatre, dived wholeheartedly into nostalgia. The script weaves together famous plot lines from the Leather Pants fiasco to the infamous "We were on a break," and pivot in a way that brings brisk rather than overloaded. Audiences are invited not just to remember the jokes, but to laugh anew at their exaggerated theatrical retellings. It's clear the creative team understands what makes Friends so popular with most generations. not just catchphrases, but the affection people hold for these flawed, funny, steadfastly loyal characters. The cast members stepped into famously well-worn roles with impressive comic precision. Enzo Benvenuti, and I apologise if I mispronounce that, portraying Ross, captured his neurotic intensity and perpetual romantic despair, while Eva Hope, who looks the most like her character, Rachel, balanced fashion-forward poise with just enough wide-eyed vulnerability. And Meg Darcy stepped into the role of Monica for the night with a competitive fire and control, with probably the most convincing role of Chandler, played by Daniel Parkinson, who landed punchlines with impeccable timing alongside the well-observed hand gesture mannerisms. Amelia Atherton's convincing Phoebe floated with offbeat charm, and Ronnie Burton's Joey earned some of the biggest laughs with his wide-eyed dopey innocence and exaggerated bravado. Also a big shout too to Edward Lee, with a variety of cameo acts stepping into roles that included Gunther and Marcel the Monkey, with hilariously funny results. The musical numbers were solid and delve into the sitcom's best-loved moments of humour. Although it is a parody, copyright caveat restricted the use of the iconic theme tune. And if those hoping for Phoebe's rendition of Smelly Cat had it with a difficult, different twist, which was a tad disappointing, although excellently performed. The set design clearly evoked the iconic apartment and coffee house, without getting too bogged down in realism. Quick transitions and simple staging kept the pace snappy. This is not a spectacular driven production, and it's a comedy engine fueled by recognition and rapid-fire references, and at the beginning of both acts it was feverish action from the crew and participation that lent the feeling you were part of the live studio audience. What made the show work was its understanding of its audience. It didn't stray from the original series, and the loudest reactions came not from surprise twists, but from the anticipation of familiar punchlines delivered with a theatrical flourish. For diehard fans of Friends, the show was a warm reunion, filled with affectionate ribbing, lively, occasional frenetic comedy that rarely pauses for breath. It didn't replace the sitcom, it lovingly mocks, nor did it try. Instead, it offered a joyous reunion with characters who shaped a generation, all wrapped up in a delightful package of song, satire and nostalgia. For fans, it was an irresistible chance to relive favourite memories that made Friends a worldwide phenomenon. And there's a photograph of the cast, and I have to say, the actress playing Rachel does look like Rachel, does look like Jennifer Aniston. And Phoebe is very similar, and they're all there, and they're all looking very happy, sitting on that orange soda.
Raise a glass or two for these Irish rovers. The world's biggest celebration of the Dubliners returns this year with its biggest tour yet, as it celebrates the 10th anniversary, and it will be rolling into Torquay's Princess Theatre on April the 8th. Over the last decade, Seven Drunken Nights has become the Globe's biggest and best-loved tribute to one of Ireland's most iconic bands, earning standing ovations from audiences and offering fans a chance to relive the glory days or to discover them for the first time. Performed by a phenomenal cast of Irish musicians, the show is packed full of classics like Whiskey in the Jar, The Irish Rover, and Rocky Road to Dublin, and it's guaranteed to get your toes tapping as they bring the joy of this much-loved folk band back to the stage. The ultimate feel-good production celebrates the mastery of the Dubliners, Ireland's favourite musical sons, in association with the legendary O'Donoghue's Pub, the famous venue where the Dubliners first started out. Created and directed by Dublin-born Ged Graham, who also stars in the production, the show combines rousing live music, charismatic storytelling, and a powerful emotion connection with the songs that shaped a nation. I can't wait for audiences to experience our brand new production to celebrate a decade of touring, said Ged. When I first created this show, I could never have imagined the incredible connection it would form with audiences around the world. This year's show is our most ambitious yet, packed with energy, nostalgia, and the same authentic Irish spirit. With breathtaking performances and authentic Irish spirit, The show spans over 50 years, commemorating the story of the Dubliners for a night of great music and a celebration of the band that influenced many generations of Irish music. Tickets for the show can be booked at www.atgtickets.com/venues/princess-theatre-talkie. And there is a picture of the five members of the company with their instruments, which look like two or three banjos, a guitar, and of course, the Irish fiddle.
The Doctors Will See You Now. Award-winning Dyad Productions and company Gavin Robertson have joined forces and will be visiting Pavilions Tynmouth on April the 15th with General Medical Emergency Ward 10, a comedy mashup spoof featuring nearly every hospital, medical-based, doctors and nurses, cliché-ridden drama. It's Dr. Anne Fleming's first day at St. David's, where her unfortunately named mentor, Dr. Death, is determined to show her who's boss. As medical emergencies overload the hapless staff, Dr. Fleming has to juggle a complicated budding love affair with a kidney and a nosy hospital boss. Yes, Holby City, casualty, ER and doctors, not to mention movies galore, are reimagined and invigorated in a pacey, cliché-ridden comic homage to the intrigues and dramas of every hospital plotline on the big and small screen. For ticket details, it's www.pavilionstynmouth.org.uk, and there is a photo of a very mischievous looking Rebecca Vaughan with Andrew Margerson and Gavin Robertson. One of them has his latex covered hand to his mouth, and another one is rather ominously twanging his blue latex gloves.
Burglaries fall across Devon and Cornwall. Do you know how many burglaries were reported last year? A Freedom of Information request shows that the number of residential burglaries reported to Devon and Cornwall Police in 2025 was 2,376. By comparison, in 2024, there were 2,584. And in 2023, 2,207. The number of arrests for residential burglary in 2025 was 586. In 24, 607. And in 2023, 555. The average response time to emergency residential burglary incidents in 2025 was 12 minutes and 26 seconds, whereas the response time to priority incidents was 36 minutes and 51 seconds.
Libraries funding plot. Devon's libraries have seen a plot twist in their funding story after a move with real intent to secure them more cash. All of Devon's 50 libraries are undergoing a consultation that could see hours cut and residents asked to travel to a library elsewhere when the one in their hometown or village is closed. But a late finance rewrite for libraries was revealed in Devon County Council's budget, backed by councillors at the full council meeting. The council said £225,000 would go to restoring the book fund back to its £500,000 level, and that an extra £425,000 had been found to support library delivery during any potential changes that could come about after the consultation on how they operate in the future. Libraries are places of opportunity, learning, connection and safety, and for many residents they are the only warm, welcoming and free community space available to them. Councillor Cottle Huncon, who campaigned to save the council's fleet of mobile libraries when the council was Conservative controlled, said the scale of responses to the consultation on libraries had been incredible. If we're serious about aspiration, literacy and opportunity, then investing in literary resources is the right thing to do, and the creation of a £1 million reserve to support library transformation and rural hubs is not a small change, but a real investment in doing things differently. The consultation has stated that none of the county's 50 libraries will close, but could be grouped into areas where at least one library would be open Monday to Saturday. This so-called network model has angered some campaigners, though, because they feel that many residents won't be able to travel to a neighbouring library, especially if they are elderly or vulnerable and rely on public transport. However, the council has said it is also seeking views on the use of volunteers and community-managed libraries, where local organisations could take on day-to-day running with support from the council and Libraries Unlimited.
That brings us to the end of this week's edition of Here and Now, recorded at our studio in Dawlish on Friday the 6th of March, and we hope that you have enjoyed the programme. If you need to contact us for any reason, the telephone number is 07376 147374. I'll repeat that, 07376 147374. Please leave your name and telephone number on the answering service and we will ring you back. Our editor this week is Jean Cole, and the copy and dispatcher I hope will be all of us mucking in together. And the programme was produced and directed by Ian Ferguson. So it's time for us to say goodbye. So from our readers, Maggie West and Sue Smallwood,
goodbye.
Goodbye.
And from me, Jean Cole, goodbye.